Wouldn't it be nice if every moment of life of this podcast was action-packed and eventful and thought-provoking and profound? Well, sometimes, most times, it's lackluster and uneventful. In most instances, it's sad. I mean, reality is generally a sad state of affairs under normal conditions. So you can imagine how it feels just a bit worse when you're an addict. And in reality, it's where I lived. That's where the story takes place, in a sad reality that I'm grateful to have in my rearview mirror. So I'm telling that part of the story as well. I mean, we could shine a light on all the massively interesting insanity all we want, but honestly, most of this story, the parts between the drama, is, well, boring and sad. And I'll tell you, it's never sadder than when it's cold and there's nowhere to get warm. And you're too prideful to go home. And you're too addicted to stop. When you feel there's nowhere to turn, so you stay cold and hope to get through the night. Try again another day. My name is Jason Farias, and this is my madness method.
I'm just living life. I can't control the way the wind gusts. Elimination game. I treat it like it's win must. Grab some gasoline, but only put in 10 bucks. Cause as of lately, man, my bread's been looking like it's thin crust. Papa John shit, I'm honest in the wrong biz.
So where are we at? We're in this apartment with no power, living off of the power I'm stealing from the neighboring apartment. I've got a new cast of characters, which seems to be common now because every time I get a new cast of characters, they last about as long as the highs that I'm chasing. You know, I've missed my cousin's wedding because of my addiction. And here's the thing, you know, I was thinking on this, and plenty of us have missed weddings or special events for one reason or another. And the reason for me that this was so poignant and sticks out in my head is because my cousin and I grew up close. You know, I was the first grandchild and she was the second. We would always joke as we were growing up that she was only 11 months younger. You know, when you always wanted to be older, she would always argue with me, "Oh, I'm only 11 months younger." And I would say, "No." Anyway, now that we're older, I'm a whole year older than she is. My, how times change. But growing up, and even still to this day, she's always kind of been my hero. I've always been so very proud of her, and that's why it broke my heart so much. And still to this day, I look back, is because she's a very important person to me, and I couldn't get my shit together enough to be there for her wedding. So, you know, I was thinking on, you know, "Oh, well, you missed your cousin's wedding. So what?" But we grew up pretty tight, and I've always looked up to her. That's why that came up. But time moves on, and we're in this apartment, and there's no power. I'm having to switch my power cord between one thing or another, but you know, depending on what it is we need to do during the day, but plus keep the fridge running. And we've got Darren and Sophia and Casper and Carrie, and yeah, we're running around together and causing a bunch of trouble, but really all we were doing was making sure each other get high. I mean, that's just where I was in this addiction. Nothing seemed more important than the next high, while still trying to do the right thing. Now, mind you, Eric had taken off, and because he had pointed out that, you know, one of the reasons why he was leaving is he felt we were using him for the money we get from the state. So as soon as he wound up taking off and we knew he was gone, I went and talked to his aunt. He had an aunt that lived in the area, and I went and sought her out and kind of let her know where things were. And she had let me know, you know, "Hey, I could have warned you about this. I knew this would be coming." And anyway, then I had to go to the state and have them, you know, shut down the money. I don't have him anymore. He's gone with the wind. I am no longer physically or financially responsible for him. And as I'm doing that, I'm actively losing my apartment. We had been given notice because the owners, it doesn't matter what kind of relationship I have with the manager of the joint, the owners of the facility are fucking done with my shit. And so we got to go with nowhere to go. We started either selling off what we had nowhere to put it. You know, we put some at Cindy's parents' house, we put some at mine. Slowly, you know, we weren't trying to alarm anybody. You know, in the closing days, in this apartment. Nate actually introduced me to this guy that lived outside. Okay, so if you're looking out the front door of my apartment, the building that's across from me, the apartments that butted up to that on the other side, there was this guy, Ray. And Nate introduced us to Ray. He was this Mexican guy that introduced me to a weed strain called Trainwreck. Now, I'm going to tell you, if y'all ain't ever tried Trainwreck and you smoke weed, I'm telling you right now, you need to hunt it out. And this became like kind of my relief point, man. Like, he'd come get high with us and he'd just keep me stoned on some good weed. And the new neighbor wound up moving in and he was this, God, I think his name might have been Tony or something. Anyway, I knew him only for a few days, but he was this big black dude and really nice guy, and we hit it off really well. And we hit it off because I was standing on the balcony and I was blowing this huge joint. And he smelled it and came over. Yo, what's up, man? I was like, yo, you want to hit this? And so he got down and he was like, yo, let me get some of this. So I told him, I was like, all right, give me $50. I'll go grab you some. Well, he was not used to the games that I play with money. And I had wound up taking his $50 and I dipped. I took it and I went and I bought dope instead. And I started flipping the dope because I'm going to take his 50 and I'm going to make me some money before I grab him his weed. This might have been 2, 3 in the afternoon on a Saturday. And I tell you what, it wasn't till like 6 or 7 I came back. And in that time, I had taken his 50 and bought some dope and flipped it, bought some more dope, flipped it, got high, bought some more dope. I must have flipped this thing 6, 7 times in that span of hours. And then when I went to go get his weed, they didn't have it. So I'm like, oh, fuck. So I had to go hunt down his weed. Ray was like calling his boy. His boy was up in Stockton. I was like, all right. So we had to get this worked out. Cindy calls me. She's like, hey, this guy's fucking tripping. I'm like, what do you mean tripping? I said, tell him to calm the fuck down. I'll be there. She's like, no, babe, you need to get here. Like, he's got a gun. And I was like, oh, fuck, dude. So I managed to put together, I got his weed, even more than he asked for. I had a, pocket full of $400 or $500. And his $50 back just for the inconvenience. But when I came walking up, he was standing up on his balcony and his girl was trying to calm him down. He was a sizable cat. He was much bigger than me. Okay. And he was mad and he had a gun in his hand and he's like waving it around, pissed off. I was like, bro, fucking shut up, dude. Calm down. Like just as arrogant as could be because, again, I was too stupid to be scared. Poor Cindy's freaking out. You know what I mean? This guy's got a gun. I'm like, bro, fucking calm down. Put that shit away, dude. I walk up. I give him his weed. It's thick. I give him his 50 back. He's like, what? I said, don't trip, dude. It took forever, man. My bad. Old boy hung me up, this and that. I kind of blamed it off on fucking waiting for his weed and then so on and so forth. So he changed his tune pretty quick. But yeah, we didn't talk after that. I didn't see him the next day on a Sunday. It was a Monday when we had to get out, and we had nowhere to go. And it was wintertime now. It was wintertime in the Central Valley. And mind you, in the early 2000s, it still got cold in the winter. I notice now it don't get cold like it used to. You would still wake up and it'd be thick, zero visibility fog and frost on the grass, and it was cold. Cindy and I were heading off into that with nowhere to go. We just walked out. I left the keys at the front and, in their little drop box they have at the office. It was open. There were people in there, but I didn't want to see anyone. We went back to bumming around, but this time we were legit homeless. Our cats lived in the car with us. We had a, decent size kennel for them that we kept in the car, along with our clothes and toiletries and everything else was either at our parents' house as best to our ability, or it was just gone. And we lived in our car. A safe space for us to be was out in Western Ranch again. Through all the turmoil, me and Joe got problems, not really messing around over there. I'll stay away from that side of the ranch. Oh, and I touch base. He's cool. I could always go hang out in his garage. We'd hang out. His parents had a pretty cool setup in the garage with a TV and a little fridge and some chairs and shit. We'd hang out there as long as we could. Every now and then we'd be able to stop by Bitch Ass Pete's, but Again, we could just hang out in the garage. Parents weren't really about having homies in the house. They didn't want anybody to fucking track any dirt on their bright pink carpet. It was crazy. It was fucking bright pink, like shag style carpet in a house built in the 90s. Whatever, man. The place where I really wound up spending the most time was Emmett's. Oh, well, I guess it's Miss Pam's house, right? Emmett lived with Miss Pam. And I'd spend a lot of time there. Most of my time was spent there during times when I was able to put Cindy at her parents' house, or if Cindy could stay with one of her friends, because I wasn't really comfortable with her bumming around the ranch. It wasn't right for her. This isn't her problem. Like, she doesn't have to be along for whatever ride that I'm on here. But I knew that I could hang out all night at Emmett's, as long as I just kept getting everybody high, which became a little easier when I was back in the ranch, just because I had the credit and credibility out there that, people just kept me high now, which was fuck about time. Just for clarity here, when I left Manteca, my connection with Sophia and Casper pretty much fell off. They had their own situation going on, and we were just kind of revolving in each other's worlds. So they really weren't hard pressed to keep our relationship going. Carrie was kind of gone with the wind, so it wasn't that we stayed really attached either. Darren and I stayed pretty close, but I needed that safety that existed in the ranch, that comfort. So that's where I would go, is I would go and be in the ranch. I'd leave Cindy somewhere safe. I'd be in the ranch hanging out, trying to figure it out, quote unquote, right? That's the bullshit you tell yourself when you're fucking blowing it. Oh, I'm just gonna try to figure it out. You didn't figure out nothing, bro. You're just getting high. But at Emmett's house, I meet this new guy, fucking Paulo. Paulo's this little Hispanic guy, little squirrely dude, maybe 5'4", 5'5", on a good day with shoes on, standing up straight. Maybe 145 pounds at best. He was one of them little backpack kids. You know what I mean? Like, if you sent him to go fucking, hey, I need you to go deliver this here, man, that shit went, and he came back with the money. As long as nobody shook him down for it, because he ain't fighting off anything. But we struck up a relationship. Again, like I had mentioned before, there's a lot of people out on the ranch now from the Bay Area, and Paulo was kind of dancing between San Jose and Western Ranch in Stockton. He was like, yeah, man, I got people out in the Bay that'll fucking buy this shit up, man. I got you. We'll put you back together. I'm like, fucking, all right, dude, let's see what you got. So I'd send him off with some shit, and he'd come back and he'd have the cash. That was nice. When he came back with enough of it, I would always grab Cindy and we'd go get a hotel, somewhere safe, somewhere the cats can get out of the fucking cage, the kennel thing we got, and run around the hotel room, and somewhere we can wash up, and just somewhere she can be safe. It was really no different, dude. My putting Cindy in hotel rooms to keep her safe was no different than putting my cats in that kennel to drive them around in the car. Sure, they were safe, but they were caged and they were scared. And, while I thought I was doing my best, what I was doing was really damaging to the psyche and emotion of this poor girl that just is trying to love her boyfriend. Why she stuck with it, I don't know. I mean, we've talked many a time, but the core reason that somebody puts up with the things that I've done to people and in the name of four people, most people walk away from that shit. Keeping her in hotel rooms, man, is one of my biggest regrets in my life, because I truly thought I was keeping her safe. I was not. I was damaging this girl. One night, I've got Cindy in an extended stay up in Stockton. And Paulo's like, hey, man, I got my girl with me. We should all hang out. And I was like, yeah, fuck it. Right on. We can go back to the hotel. We'll get high. Like, Cindy won't be at the hotel alone, because I left her alone a lot. I put her safe. I tried to put together some semblance of a life as best I could anyway. So Paulo shows up. He's got his girl with him, his girl Ashley. She's this white girl. She was young. She was young. I think she was 17 or 18 when we met. And I just remember she had these striking blue eyes, and she still kind of had like her baby fat on her. But she looked like a very innocent, like good girl. Like, why is she with this dude? Is this like, oh, every girl wants to be with a thug? I mean, he's not really that, but I guess he plays the role. The night we met, we were all hanging out in this hotel room. And I don't know what he and she were arguing about, but this motherfucker put hands on her. And I was like, what the f? I don't even know you that well, bro. For you to like, you're in my hotel room, you're putting hands on a female. I said, bro, let me holler at you for a minute. I was like, Ashley, you okay? And she's like, yeah, I'm okay. And Cindy's like consoling her. Like, what the fuck, bro? So I take him out in the hallway and I just fucking light him up, dude. I fucking give him like three to the gut and two to the head, dude. He's on the ground. And I didn't even let him hit the ground. I just snatched him back up. I said, motherfucker, you ever do that shit again, bro? It'll be the last time anybody sees you. And it's interesting because it was that night that I realized, hey, this isn't normal operating procedure. I don't immediately resort to violence, but there was no hesitation in me anymore. Like I had no reservations left. I think at the time I was probably maybe 165. Like I wasn't much bigger than him. I mean, now, if you were to see me now, me beating up on a guy like that, you'd be like, fuck, that's pretty fucked up, bro. But I mean, he put hands on a chick, and two, I wasn't that much bigger than him at the time. I was a proper dope fiend weight, you know? Anyway, he goes in, he apologizes. All is, you know, quote unquote, well. When they left that night, I gave Ashley my phone number and was like, you call me if anything happens or if you need anything. Don't, because what I was seeing in her is what Cindy started out as. And not that Cindy was any different at that time, but the reality is that she was being poisoned by what was happening. And if I could ever help prevent any other person from going down this road, I would try. And actually, Ashley and Cindy became pretty good friends. Paula was all right. You know, he'd go back and forth from the bay and he'd kind of disappear for a week or two at a time and he'd pop back up and, you know, bring me whatever money he owed me and I'd send him off with more shit. And, you know, I was kind of starting to put things back together, not just with him, but Emmett was getting some shit done. Bitch ass Pete was doing some things. Kind of the old crew, the lower level guys in the ranch were kind of coming back together and handling some business for me. And I was starting to get some money in my pockets and able to afford some hotel rooms. And then I catch word that Paulo has been throwing up my click. And here, you might laugh about this, okay? It's goofy now that I'm an adult and I'm looking back on it, but every summer, going back to when me and Bub got our first apartment, we would come up with like names for our group, right? Our group of guys. We'd always poke fun that all, hey, gangs have all their fucking shit. We should have one for ourselves. And one summer we went by ATM, accessory to murder. And then the one we landed on was WCP, West Coast Players. Yes, I hear it, you guys. But that was what it was. I mean, we had hand signs, the whole shit. Dude, I still every now and then throw it up when I'm at Raider games. Somehow, and I hold this very personal because to me, the WCP was a very tight-knit group of guys. So it wasn't like just any old person gets to throw up my set. And I catch word that Paulo tagged WCP on an overpass in San Jose. If I remember correctly, it was Guadalupe Parkway. Don't quote me on that. I think that's what it was. But anyway, I was like, that motherfucker's not even part of my set, but he's tagging my shit out in the bay. So I had to go take a look for myself. And I drive out to San Jose, and man, sure as shit, there the fuck it is. Now, mind you, I prefaced this visit on, hey, man, I'm gonna bring you some shit, pick up my money. I need to get out of the valley. Yeah, man, he shot me his address. I told him, I said, all right, I'll be there. I see this on the overpass, and I get mad, but I'm like, ah, but that could stand for anything. It could have been anyone, you know. So I get to where Paulo is. And I ask him, I'm like, yo, do you see on this fucking overpass? It says WCP on it. He was like, yeah, bro, you like that shit? I said, what the fuck, bro? What the you did, the, bro? You ain't part of my clique, bro. And he's like, oh, Jay, it ain't like it. But, nah, bro. I told him fucking get in the house. He's like, he didn't want to go in the house. And I said, get the fuck in the house. Let's go right now. I said, I'm gonna get high and we're gonna figure out how you're gonna fix this. And he didn't want to go in. And man, when I tell you this monster of a bitch comes walking out the house, like thinking she's gonna check me or some shit. I mean, yo, this was a big bitch, dude. She was 5'10, 5'11, 300 pounds. This was a big bitch. And it wasn't like she was holding herself well. Like I think she was in a wife beater and what used to be shorts. And tell me that Paulo doesn't introduce me to this bitch and her name is Paula. I swear to God, you guys, that's his real name. That's her real name. I don't give a fuck if they hear this. That's his and her name, Paulo and Paula. Now, mind you, I'm like, who the fuck is this big bitch? I'm like, oh, it must be a cousin or a sister or some shit. He's like, this is Paula. I was like, what's so Paula? How you know Paula? She's like, that's my man. I said, oh, Otis, you're who? Now, here's the thing, y'all. I just got done telling you I just met Ashley, this very good girl, young, impressionable, not about this life. And now he's with this big bitch out in the bay throwing up my click. Like, first of all, dude, my arrogance is in full force at this time. First of all, nobody in my crew hooks up with monsters, okay? And you don't get to throw up my click if you ain't part of it, and you're spray painting on shit, so you're advertising something that you don't represent. And now you don't want to go in the house because you don't want me to meet fucking Oscar the Grouch you're keeping in here. Like, nah, dude. I looked at this big girl. I said, get in the fucking house. She said, I said, don't say another fucking word. Get in the fucking house. Like, my whole demeanor changed and I fucking flexed up. Get in the fucking house. We go in there and I get high and they're both looking at me. They're like, hey, I said, no, you can't have none of this. You just shut the fuck up while I get lit. And as I'm sitting there getting high and they're just staring at me and they're like scraping the fucking the resin off of the stems of their pipes to try to get loaded, and I'm just loading fat ass bowls. I said, all right, here's what's gonna happen. And I slapped Paula, whack, fucking backhanded him. I wanted him to know, dude, this ain't okay. I said, what do you got going on? Now, see, what I wound up learning while I was sitting here is the car he was driving was this tubby bitch's car. And I knew that this car had beat because I had asked. I was like, here's what we're going to do. You're going to give me the system out of your car and whatever cash is in your pocket. And if I ever see you again, you're going to go missing. She was like, that's my system. I said, bitch, what the fuck did I tell you? We're in the house now, right? She, give me, I said, now shut the fuck up. And I said, Paulo, go get that fucking stereo system out of that car right now. Or we gonna have a massive fucking issue. And she was like trying to hoot and holler. And I said, say another fucking word, bitch. Say another word. I made him go out there, strip that whole stereo out that car, put it in my car. I reached in his pockets and took whatever else he had left. I got in my car and I went back to the valley. And I sat on that for a while. You know, I talked with Cindy. I told her what I saw. She couldn't believe it. She was like, we have to let Ashley know. And I was like, you know, it's kind of against the rules to be fucking. I mean, that's kind of Ashley's fucking problem to need to figure out. But I was like, I'll tell you what. So I got a hold of Ashley and I went and saw her and I said, you need to quit fucking with that dude. She was like, why? I said, be because I said so. You need to quit fucking with that guy. Now, I'll be honest with you, she and I still talk, and I don't know if I'm the one that told her about Paula or if she wound up finding out or had already heard and I just confirmed but I just like you're done fucking with that guy. Don't fucking reach out to him. He's been told not to contact you. Like, this is how this is going down. And she was like, all right, you know, I trust you. I said, all right. And about my business, I went. You know, every action has a consequence. And fucking kicking that little dumbass down the road cost me quite a bit of money. So in hindsight, maybe I should have kept my mouth shut a little longer, because I'm gonna tell you, the amount of money he was bringing in is what was keeping me in hotel rooms. But not that I couldn't have afforded it with the amount that maybe Emmett was producing, or BAP, he didn't really bring in a lot. Oh, didn't get down that way. So it was trickling in at this point. And it's getting cold, you guys. And I mean fucking cold. That kind of cold where you got shoes and socks on, but your toes are freezing and they feel sweaty. Like full time, that kind of cold. And now we're out in the street. No more hotel rooms, because I felt like I was doing the right thing by standing up for Ashley and cutting his little bitch ass off. But it had to be done, you guys. You don't get to represent who I am. First of all, you're banging a monster, dude. That's gross. Second of all, I never told you you could do that. I don't even remember having the conversation like, yeah, this is my clique. Da, 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 da. He must have heard me talking with I don't know whom, but there's rules. In passing one day, there was a knock on the door at Emmett's house. And wouldn't you fucking believe it? It was Jerry. I don't know if you guys remember Jerry, but he was the one I threw off the balcony for talking to Cindy when I told him not to. So when the door opened and I was in there, he like hesitated. But he came in. And we straightened some shit out. He understood that he was wrong, but I admitted, like, I overreacted. I was glad he was okay. Like, he was a cool dude, man. Like, it was just he wasn't following the rules of the house and needed to be taught a lesson, and he learned it. And I guess we're all the better for it. He was there to hang out, and the night went on a long time. He had a little shit, I had quite a bit, and what I didn't have was somewhere to be. And he was like, oh, yo, Jay, I'm staying with this girl back in Manteca. And he had this, was it duplex or something like that at the end of Aspen Road there in Manteca in the North Gate area. And he was like, you guys can come chill there. He's like, my girl doesn't know I get high though. I'm like, bruh, how are you going to explain to her? Like, oh, hey, I got these two people with me. We're going to stay up all fucking night. Like, yeah, but whatever, bro. We're cold. And I've been at Emmett's too long, and I don't have anywhere to put fucking Cindy. And so we go over there. We were at Emmett's that entire night. The next day, we went about our daily business and then wound up over at Jerry's. Cindy and I did. And his girl wasn't going for it, dude. She's kind of a bitch, dude. But I mean, I guess if you show up with what I'm presuming were obvious tweakers, I don't know. I always prided myself in maybe not looking like one, but. Yeah, this chick wasn't going for it. So we had like 35 minutes there. And she was like, you motherfuckers need to leave. She even booted his ass. Right down the street from him was somebody else he partied with. His road kind of looped around a Union Road there in Manteca. And there's a green belt in the North Gate area. And this house was next to the walkway to the green belt. We got to go in there. We were in the garage. It was me, Cindy, Jerry, and a bunch of other fuckers. I don't know. It never even dawned on me at this point to maybe reach out to Sophia or Casper or Darren for that matter. But we stayed in this garage all night, and ultimately Jerry wound up fucking weaseling his way back to his girl's house because he couldn't fuck up his place to stay for us. So he left us there. And I'm gonna tell you, dude, Cindy and I talked about this night for a long time, because that's the coldest I've ever been. In a freezing garage. It was probably 28, 30 degrees that night. We didn't have anything warm worth having on. We had our cats in their carrier in this garage, wrapped up in blankets so they could keep warm. We froze that night. We froze. We stayed cuddled in a ball on one chair. And when the dope was out, all we could do is sit there and freeze. Hell of a decline. You guys, this happened within 6 weeks from leaving that apartment to sleeping in a freezing cold garage. I've never been so cold in my life. I vowed that I would never be that kind of uncomfortable again. Now, it took a long time to secure that vow, but it was so cold. And I did my best to keep Cindy warm and my cats. Of course. But this is what addiction does, man. This is what it does. It was a good time. I had all the drive and want in my heart, but my soul was just fucking ate up, man. Like, I went from having what felt like plenty to having less than nothing. And here's Cindy still right by my side, freezing her fucking ass off. This is addiction, guys. This is the face of it. This is real life. For those of you that can't relate at all to what I'm talking about, I hope I can paint a clear enough picture for you. But if you've never been freezing cold and hungry and coming down off of drugs and lost, man, what a sad state of affairs. The only fire that was left was in my heart, man, but that wasn't keeping me warm. It was character building, for sure. Anyway, y'all, I'm gonna wrap this one up. I'm making myself too sad. Anyway, if you like what you're listening to, and God, I appreciate you listening, please rate and like and reach out. My Madness Method 819 at gmail.com or My Madness Method on Instagram. I'm working on some other projects. I'm gonna keep saying it. I don't want to say what it is just yet because I want it to be in place, but I'm gonna do something with this. And I'd love to hear from you guys. And if you want to talk, if you just want to vent, if you just have fucking had enough and need somebody to listen, man, I'm here. Until the next time, my name is Jason Farias, and this is my Madness Method.
This loss is a burden that we both share. Two sinners can atone from a long prayer. Souls tied intertwined by pride and guilt. There's darkness in the distance.